Welcome to the Information Entry Podcast. In this episode, we dive back into the mysteries of ancient Egypt, from the stars that guided pyramid builders to the medical papyri that foreshadowed modern medicine that we talked about in last week's episode, if you want to go back and check that out. Join us as we explore the ingenuity of a civilization that laid the foundations of science and technology. My name is Mitchell, one of your hosts. I'm joined, as per usual, by Tom. How you doing, Tom?
Hello. Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Do you know, I'm trying to shake this illness. Like, it keeps rearing its head.
What is
like,
it?
Yeah, it's come back. It's come back. It was like gone for a little bit, but now it's back.
That's tragic.
Nightmarish. Yeah, I think it's like I booked a little bit of time off, and I think my body's done that thing where like, ooh, you said that we can relax for a couple of days. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, that's it. That's always the way of it.
Scientific investigations into that.
You're asking the wrong person, I'm afraid. I'm sure there must have been. Because it's not an uncommon thought line, is it? So I'm sure there must be. But I am unaware, I'm afraid. I try and stay far away from medical expertise.
Yeah. So I remember, like, wet paper towel. Being younger. Wet paper towel, yeah. Wet paper towel and paracetamol. When I was younger, like, over the Christmas holidays, I would always get ill. Like, my body would be like, relaxation time, blah, 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 blah. It'd be like,
okay, boom. There have been a couple of studies on it. According to the BBC, the stress hormones that help us cope with work deadlines get out of balance and leave us open to infection. But the adrenaline helps us to cope with the stress as well as boosting the immune system to help fight infection and keep us well. Thus, when we are not at work and the stress hormones decline, as well as the adrenaline, we're just left open to like infection and tiredness and becoming ill. So there you go.
Yes, term for it, if you didn't know. It's called leisure sickness.
Ah, the classic leisure sickness. It'll get you.
Yeah. Which means that I must have been stressed because it's to do with my body's stress response.
Yeah. Which means you deserve the time off work.
Yeah.
And you can sue them.
Well, I thought about that. No,
you triggered my stress response.
Yeah, well, it's a good way of being able to prove it. Be like, I'm stressed. I need time off. Time to go to the doctors. Well, it could be. That could be the case. I don't need the doctors. Okay, so we are still in our ancient civilization phase. Stories of the past. We're going back into ancient Egypt because we managed to do a whole episode and not touch on the pyramids at all.
It's quite impressive.
Which is quite impressive, like dancing around the pyramids, but not really getting there. Before we dive in, I haven't got any facts because it's a part two episode. If you want facts, I can give you them, Tom. Do you want anything? You want anything? I can quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you want me to want you to, so yes. Give us a fact.
Well, okay, so I have a fact, and it's related to a point that I'll come on to later, which was the Egyptians used advanced mathematics for building agriculture and astronomy. They developed a system of numerals, including the concept of zero, and understood the basic principles of geometry.
That's a pretty good time.
Yeah. Imagine being the day where you're sat there with your mate, and you're like, you're discussing maths, and be like, 1 + 1, yeah, 2. Okay, that's good. That's a good basis. And be like, how about there just isn't a number? And they're like, what do you mean? It's like, how about there's just nothing and we create a number for it? It's like, how can it be a number for nothing? A number is, you know, one or two. Is there like, no, I mean, and they're like, bam, heads explode.
Yeah,
they can't believe someone invented a number for nothing.
Well, I guess then you fall along the philosophical thought paradigm of, is it a number or just a representation of the lack of numbers?
Yeah. Yes.
Which I guess is probably more how it would have come across.
Yeah.
It.
But, like, if you go like, add these two numbers together, like, I'm sure you've had this in the mathematical, like, in math back in the day, add these two numbers together and it's like 10, 0. Technically, it is a number.
I see.
That's what you mean.
Yeah. I think we use now, because we use Arabic numerals, right? Where the zero represents a lack of something, but also the empty digit space.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Yes, we're like thinking about
1001. You've got two. There's a lack of numbers there.
we are thinking of it, but back then, if they didn't use the same numerals, they may have represented digit separately. Mm-hmm. It's very. I don't know the numeral system they use, so unable to comment. But I imagine they may have represented 10 differently to.
We went over the ages, and there was like a influence from that side of the world. I imagine that they pulled something across.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. And as cultures meet, right? They share things like that. All right. Well, I've got the news this week.
You got the tea.
I've got the tea.
I've also got some tea, but it's more of a sad tea.
Oh, okay.
It's like I was going to call that Lady Grey, but that's very specific. And it's like an Earl Grey with milk in it. It's a sad tea.
That's an abysmal tea. That's an abysmal tea.
Well, on a work trip, the person we were like 10 o'clock with a bar, and they got an Earl Grey and then with milk, and I was like, I'm going to bed. Fuck this. I ain't staying down here.
That's gross.
You're gonna be Earl Grey with milk in it. I'll just
get out of there.
All right. Well, it's less sad than that.
Let's hope. So my news is less like some specific happened and breakthrough, but more solo eclipses. Why are they important? It's been all over kind of the science news this week since a full total solar eclipse just crossed the US. And what to start this off, I've got something quite funny. So I was watching this science reporter on TikTok, and one of the things you can do with the Google, I think, API, you can look at like the top most Googled results.
Oh, it's called Google Trending.
Google Trends. There we go.
Yeah, you don't need API or anything.
Okay, so he was looking at some of the top results of the day, and it was, why do my eyes hurt?
Yes, I saw that. And absolutely.
If the top states in the US which had Googled, why do my eyes hurt, creates like a black line across the US of where, you know, it's reached peak interest, maps exactly where the line of the like totality of the solar eclipse went across the states, which means people must have just been looking at it with their bare ass eyes, just no protection, just just
raw dog in the sun.
Do you know what I was about to say and I stopped myself, but yes. Just raw dog in the sun with their eyes.
What kind of damage would it cause?
Like blindness?
Yeah, but I'm like, how's it like?
It burns your retinas. And it burns the cells. The cells at the back of your eye, which pick up light, become overexposed because the light is too bright and they die.
Oh, yeah, okay. So imagine like, if you start a fire with a magnifying glass, do you know, it puts into one space. That's exactly what your eyeball's doing and why it burns and why it hurts so much. Is it like directs it into one singular point? If anyone wants to,
yeah,
I don't know. Was it Toy Story? But those movies where like they burn the
Toy Story
with the sun, the glass. No, he uses it to start the firework in Toy Story.
Yes,
More like the ants. Burning the ants. Your retina is essentially the ants in that situation.
Yeah. And so if you have oddly shaped eyes and you see out of focus, that's where glasses come in, because they'll reshape the light before your eye reshapes it to make sure it hits the right spot.
Yes. It's also a big thing that can happen if you spend a lot of time on like a season snowboarding or anywhere that is like with a lot of snow. Like you have to wear sunglasses, otherwise you can get essentially sunburn on your eyes.
Yeah.
And like the white bits become bad. I don't know what it's called.
It's not snow blindness, is it?
It's along those lines, yeah, because if you keep going and don't do it, you then get snow blindness.
Yeah.
That's keratitis, snow blindness, which results of the light being reflected off the bright white snow into your eyes. Much like regular snow sunburn, the effects aren't noticed until sometimes after exposure.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, and you can't really put like, you know, sun cream on your eyeballs. So just wear some.
I mean, you can. It just hurts like a bit.
There's nothing
not
stopping
anything.
You from doing it, but it may sting just as much as snow blindness.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Solar eclipses. So in addition to aspiring artists, musicians, solar eclipses have also been the site or the reason for numerous scientific discoveries. So for over a century, scientists have used it to explore the sun's structure, explosive events, find evidence for the theory of general relativity, and discover even a new element. So these days, NASA scientists are still studying eclipses to make discoveries about the sun, the earth, and our environment, even. Total solar eclipses are particularly important because they allow scientists to see a part of the sun's atmosphere known as the corona that's too faint to see except when the bright light of the sun is blocked. Now, studying the innermost part of the corona, which is only visible during a total solar eclipse, not a partial one, is key to answering fundamental questions about how heat and energy are transferred from the sun out into the solar wind. And that's important because this constant stream of particles that the sun spews into the solar system then come and hit us and other planets and impact our technology. And so it's actually quite important to try and understand how that happens so we can prevent that in the future, but also just understand what's going on in the sun. In 2021, scientists had undertaken quite a long-term study of solar eclipses, and that's where they had confirmed the existence of the solar cycles, which is an 11-year rotation of the sun's prominence and eminence. It goes through like an 11-year cycle of more intense, less intense, and we figure that out and confirm that through solar eclipses. The other thing that we use solar eclipses to study is the Earth's atmosphere, particularly the ionosphere, which is the upper part of the atmosphere that interacts with radio waves and thus communication and GPS. Animal behaviors are quite interesting to study during solar eclipses. Yes. During the last total solar eclipse visible from the US, which was in August, scientists observed that there was a decline in the number of animals flying around during the eclipse. And some of them actually projected that this time, because it's in April, it may trigger some animals to start their migration.
Ooh, yeah.
And what I didn't realize is during solar eclipses is how like the temperature changes and wind changes during a solar eclipse. So the cool down in an eclipse, causing by obviously the moon slowly covering the sun, it briefly reduces the amount of heat stored in the atmosphere. This heat forces air to rise and make the atmosphere more unstable, which can then create clouds, storms, and wind to let out this heat energy. Now, as this eclipse cools the air, the atmosphere then calms down and the wind speeds drop, because the atmosphere isn't working as hard to balance itself out due to this unstable change now. If you're watching a total solar eclipse and the wind suddenly goes away, that's why. I don't think it'll be so dramatic as like suddenly there's no wind ever. But you might be able to notice it, which in itself is quite cool. So that's my news and why solar eclipses are cool / important. And they've been seeing absolutely stellar pictures. Oh, I didn't even mean to do that pun. There'll be some great pictures coming from it and of people actually picturing the coronal mass ejections from the sun as well. So you have like the black disk of the moon, and then around the outside you have coronal ejections from the sun, obviously thousands of miles behind it, millions even. I think the weirdest and coolest thing about eclipses is the fact that it doesn't happen. It literally only happens because our sun is exactly far enough away that as the moon passes in front of it, they are the same size. Does that make sense? The diameter of the moon is proportional to the distance that the sun is away in relation to both their sizes, which means it perfectly eclipses it. Like, that doesn't happen very often in the solar system or anywhere, really. So it's one of those cool coincidences. And as the moon moves further and further away, we won't get total solar eclipses in the future.
No, we will.
Why?
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, I was like, sun's moving away, it'll get smaller. No.
No, the moon's moving away, yeah.
Yeah. That's all sad.
Sad. Okay, on the note of sad, what's your sad news then?
Professor Higgs passed away.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain who he is?
Well, yeah, if anyone doesn't know, listen to a science podcast, but he predicted the existence of a new particle called the Higgs boson, he proposed it back in 1964. It would then take 50 years before the particle's existence could be confirmed, and that was due to the experiments at the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. Yep, that happened in 2012. 2012. He was jointly awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for his work in 2013, along with François Englert. So he passed away.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool discovery.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Also, I've got some news, but that is it's Egypt and pyramid related. And we've discussed this before. Oh dear, we didn't mention it because we didn't talk about pyramids, but I thought I'd bring it up and get your temperature check on it. Get a vibe check.
Okay.
And that's the recladding of the pyramids.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you feel about it? A lot of people are not happy.
Do you want to explain what, for people who haven't heard about the idea?
If people don't know, I haven't been following Egyptian news, which if you're from around the world, I wouldn't expect you to. But it popped up a while ago, and I think they're nearly half done with one of the pyramids. Is that they are essentially recladding one of the pyramids, or they may choose to do all of them, in granite, I think, is what they're going for. But the project, dubbed the Project of the Century by the head of Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities, aims to restore the pyramid's original appearance by reconstructing its granite layer, which has eroded over time. This involves placing rough granite slabs on the pyramid's base, attempting to replicate its original encasement. But critics have argued that this restoration effort deviates from the global guidelines of such projects, likening it to straightening the Tower of Pisa in its deviation from historical accuracy and preservation of norms. So archaeologists have expressed concerns over the rushed nature of the work, suggesting it skips vital research and document phases necessary for such a historically significant project. But yeah, they are. There's images. You can go and look. It doesn't look great. It doesn't look good. Because in my opinion, if they were going to restore it properly to how it used to look, for those that don't know, the pyramids essentially had a granite cladding over the bricks that we all know and love and can see this day and age, but then they were covered in limestone.
Right.
Back when, you know, it was in its prime. So they would have been white and like perfectly flat. I say perfectly flat, I obviously not saying legitimately perfectly flat, but it looked like a flat pyramid, not the squares that we see today. So if they're gonna do it, they need to go whole hog or not bother at all. Like, you don't half-ass a pyramid.
I can't find... Oh, I think I can... Yes. I can find images of it.
Just put cladding. Egypt pyramid cladding.
Egypt pyramid. Because I'm also finding a report saying that they're not going to do it anymore.
Look at the images.
I don't know if this is out of date. Yeah. Oh, so it looks like they started.
Yeah.
Which meant they went back on their word twice.
Yeah.
So they said they were going to do it. Then there was outcry. And then this guy was like, oh, don't worry. No one's going to touch them. This was a guy called Zahi Hawass, mm-hmm. former Ministry of Antiquities, who headed a committee, said they're not going to touch it. And now, obviously, they have. So that's fun. That looks
flip floppings.
It looks odd. Like, I get that's probably how it was. I just don't know whether you should. I think it depends why you're doing that. Are you doing that to preserve them so that they don't go away, or are you doing that just for the sake of being able to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they needed that so that they didn't disappear forever, then fine. you know what? Go for it, because I'd rather have them there, even if they're preserved.
Yeah.
And not how we're used to it, but the ancient, the way how they were, you know, envisioned. But if you're just doing it to be like, oh yeah, let's do this for shits and gigs, then nah.
Yeah. For shits and gigs. Yeah.
Just build another one next to it and do it to that.
You know what? They could. I wonder if they could, like, if they could improve upon it. Because if you didn't know, one of the reasons I had a look at it, I thought it was quite interesting. The limestone that was on it was obviously the highest of quality of limestone they could get back in the day, because it was, you know, I can't remember who it's to memory, one of the pharaohs. They ended up in the medieval era taking the limestone off and then using it to build towns and buildings around.
So it was looted.
Looted. I don't think it was looted, but a percentage of it probably was looted.
It was deconstructed.
Deconstructed to be used elsewhere. But imagine that, just a white, because it had a gold. The top of it's in a museum somewhere, isn't it? I don't want to say it's in a British museum, but it may be in a British museum.
90% chance is in a British museum. I didn't know the top was around.
Yeah. Pyramidon? I can't remember what it is.
Oh, yeah.
The top of it is. Yeah, it's called a Pyramidon. It's the top.
It's in Cairo.
Oh, good. That's good. It's good. It's good that it's in Cairo. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. But that's a specific pyramid of Amenemhat the Third.
There's a few.
There's probably a few around, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm looking at images now. Called a pyramid capstone. Well, Pyramidon is the shape, I guess. Pyramidon is the capstone of an ancient Egyptian pyramid, or the upper section of an obelisk. Oh, so it doesn't have to be a pyramid, it could be an obelisk as well. Plural, pyramidia. Yeah. Before we move on, I saw a joke earlier that I thought you'd appreciate.
Okay.
Let me get it up so I get it right. What's blue and really bad for your teeth?
Blue and really black. Tango Ice Blast.
A brick going 114,004,827 miles per hour.
What is that? Because it's blue shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good science joke. Good science joke.
That's lols.
For those that don't get the joke, the speed at which the wavelength of the color red or blue shift will shift to blue, so the brick will appear blue, is that speed. It'll disintegrate before it gets that speed, because it's like a sixth of the speed of light.
Unless it's made of some weird like obsidian brick,
could be. Yeah, but then it'd be black. So then
you paint it, obviously. It's put B&Q.
Either the paint will come off, though.
Nah.
Just some heat-resistant, frictionless paint.
It'll be on fire moving so quickly.
It probably would. Probably be on fire. And that's the Doppler effect, if anyone wants to do any research into that. Googling. Right. I don't mean research. I don't mean like go and research the Doppler effect. It's a thing. You don't need to go do research into Doppler.
Do not need to discover it. It has been
named and claimed.
So I've got a quick bit on ancient Egyptian solar eclipses, because
continue.
Just whilst we're here. So ancient Egyptians viewed solar eclipses as significant and often interpret them as omens or signs from the god. Of course, they didn't have the scientific understanding that we do now of solar eclipses and why they may occur, so attributed them to supernatural phenomena or perceived as portents of impending disaster or even political change. So priests and astronomers, will have observed eclipses and recorded their occurrence, along with other celestial events, in temple inscriptions, astronomical texts, and historical records. So we do have some ancient Egyptian solar eclipse, like records of them happening. And there was a particular famous example in ancient Egypt that occurred during the reign of Pharaoh Ramses II, one of the more famous pharaohs, I do believe. It's thought that this occurred around 1223 BCE. And this eclipse is recorded in several historical sources, including the writings of ancient Greek historian Herodotus. Herodotus? Yes. According to Herodotus, during a battle between the Egyptians and Hittites, there we go, a solar eclipse occurred, leading to a temporary ceasefire, as both sides interpreted it as a divine sign. While there is some debate about the historians of the exact timing and significance of the eclipse, it does illustrate that the celestial events would have had significant impacts on ancient cultures and their interpretations. I mean, imagine back in the day, your whole life is dedicated to, you know, serving gods, or that's just what you know to be true because there isn't anything else. You're fighting a battle for your old man Ramses II. You're defending your land, and then a solar eclipse happened. I mean, what else are you going to think other than, well, they're telling us to stop, aren't they?
It's making me think that the storyline for Avatar is, you know, they just nicked it from ancient history.
Oh, most things have been nicked from ancient history. Yeah. At least they made it mean something, right?
Yeah, fire bending becomes more powerful.
No, water bending. No, firebending becomes more powerful because of Hazen's comet.
Oh, the comet, yeah. I've
got and then the waterbending becomes more powerful of the moon.
Yeah, that makes more sense because the lunar cycles causing...
Yeah.
Beep, beep, beep.
And then she literally turns into the moon, and then, you know, that's sad. Hashtag spoilers. Cool.
Yeah, she literally just turned into the moon. Oh, dear.
I mean, how could you ever compete with that?
Oh, I don't really know. Oh, I don't know. Really? Always watching as well.
Yeah, so from then on out. Weird. Alright, well, what have you got for us?
Well, I've got some stuff actually on ancient Egyptian astrology. Do you know what? When I was about to mention, I didn't want to interrupt, but do you remember we were interviewing Dr. Lawrence Krauss and you called him an astrologer?
No, I called him a cosmetologist.
What?
A cosmetologist, somebody who does makeup. Cosmetics.
Still makes me laugh to this day.
Yeah, same. Sometimes like, that's one of those intrusive thoughts that randomly enters my brain. I cringe and then just try and get on with my day like it was, like that didn't happen.
Yeah. Just laying in bed, your brain's like, hey, psst. You know that one time you called him a famous scientist?
You know, I try not to think about it, but here we are.
Here we are.
That's still up on the internet somewhere.
I think you can find it. I don't know if it actually is. If not, We can possibly we can't use that, unfortunately.
Oh, it's so still there.
Ancient Egyptian astronomy. As you previously said, it's tied into their like religious beliefs, all that good stuff that's related to their culture. It was entwined both with their practical needs, such as agriculture, and then also their religious belief. The civilization words. This is why I know I'm coming down with. It's like illness. I can't see. My words are slurring. The civilization's study of the stars date back to prehistoric times, with evidence like the stone circles at the Nabta Playa from the 5th millennium BCE showing the Egyptians developed a calendar based on their observation of the heavens. This calendar was crucial for predicting the annual Nile flood, a cornerstone of the Egyptian agriculture and society. If you didn't know, the Nile flooded. I think it was to do with the new year, and it coincided their new year with the Nile's yearly flood.
Yes, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. So their astronomical practices were advanced and included the division of the night sky into 36 groups of stars, known as the deacons, which helped them measure time during the night. The appearance of the star Sirius, Sabdet to the Egyptians, were particularly significant, marking the start of their new year, which actually coincided with the Nile's flood. This shows their keen observational skills and the practical applications of their astronomical knowledge. Moreover, the Egyptians used various instruments for their astronomical observations. The Merket, essentially from an early form of astrolabe. It's not an astrolabe. Is that?
Astrolope? How am I spelling that? Astrolope?
La, astrolabe. Abe? It's essentially any type of early scientific instrument used for reckoning time for observational purposes. It's essentially like it looks like a dial. And it allowed them to track the star's movement and align their monumental architecture with celestial phenomena. The construction of their temples, pyramids, such as the alignments found in Giza, the pyramid complex showcases their desire to mirror the heavens on Earth, perhaps a way to bring divine order into their terrestrial domain. What does the pyramids align to? Well, I'm going to say it's Orion's belt with the three, but I could be wrong.
Oh, I'm not going to stab at the dark in that one. What stars the pyramids line up with? Three stars in the constellation of Orion.
Yes, yeah, Orion's belt. Orion's belt. Because if you go there, I think that there's images where it touches the horizon where there's the three up and then there's the three pyramids. What's up? What's your theory?
No, this is a theory. It's called the Orion correlation theory. The basis of this idea concerns the proposition that the relative positions of the three main ancient Egyptian pyramids on the Giza plateau was by design correlated with the relative positions of the three stars in the constellation of Orion, as these stars appeared in 10,000 BC. However, there is significant critique of this. Among these critiques are two astronomers, Ed Krupp from Los Angeles and Tony Farrell of Cape Town. Using planetarium equipment, they independently investigated the angle between the alignment of the Orion's belt and north during the era cited by the original authors of the theory, and they found that the angle was somewhat different from the perfect match which was thought to exist. Even a 47 to 50 degree difference.
Yes. Yeah, no, they could have looked up, saw it, and been like, you know what, we'll just do three in a line, it looks good.
Yeah, that's I mean, it
looks good on the belt.
When you're constructing that much, something that big, right? But yeah, it was it was purported a perfect 37 degree match, whereas in the observatories they found it to be a 47 to 50 degree angle. Mm-hmm. Which there's quite a big difference.
Yeah. So the influence of the Egyptian astronomy extends beyond its practical applications to candidate making and architecture. Through the ages, as Egyptian civilization merged and interacted with Greek, Roman, and later Arab cultures, the knowledge and astronomical practices of the Egyptians contributed significantly to the development of astronomy in the Hellenistic world and beyond. The city of Alexandria, for example, became a crucial center point of astronomical study, giving rise to figures like Claudius Ptolemy. Just why would you put a P and a T together? Like, he's not a pterodactyl. Ptolemy
is.
it's a silent P.
Just ignore the P.
Yeah, just ignore the P. Claudius Ptolemy, whose works would dominate Western and Islamic astronomy until the Renaissance. The Egyptian astronomers achieved a remarkable understanding of the cosmos, knowing about 43 constellations and the movements of celestial bodies, including the planets known to them. Their work laid the foundations for many aspects of modern astronomy. While they might have not had telescopes as we understand them, there was evidence to suggest that using of optical aids to enhance their observations. So, you know, it was massively important to religious practical applications. The effort to understand the charts and the cosmos were not only the sacred knowledge, but also dealing with their lives.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, isn't it? Like how crazy accurate some of that stuff was.
Yeah.
And how might they manage to use it? I don't know if you ever watched Wonders of the Solar System. Brian Cox.
No.
Back in the day. It was a documentary.
I probably watched it in physics.
Must have come out over 10 years ago. It is like my comfort TV. I don't know why, but I just put that on. It's great. Maybe it's on BBC iPlayer these days. I'm unsure. But there's one episode where he goes to Peru in a place called Chanquilo. And there's this ancient pre-Incan megastructure. There was a city, and from the other side of the city, there's this mound. And at the top of it are 12, and let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 stones. And for years, they were like, what is this megastructure here for? Why is it there? Until they stood there at the city at sunrise, and they realized, depending what time of the year you're there, the sun will come up at different points between these stones, and it acts as a solar calendar.
No, that's cool.
And then it'll go across the 12 stones, and then when, you know, you hit halfway through the year, it'll come back across them again. Mm-hmm. Really, really cool. Yeah. So that's 2,500 years old, I think.
Well, they didn't have much else to do back then. It's all why I revert to...
Like, Chanquilo, you know, by the way, is Peru, for anyone wondering where that is.
Oh, Magic the Gathering didn't exist back in the day, so what they were just doing their evenings, you know?
Yeah, I know. Just chat?
Doom scroll. Chat and look at the skies. Yeah,
they made
philosophers and astronomers just looking at the skies and talking.
They wrote
to
stuff down and went, do you know what, in a few thousand years, this is really going to trip them out.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they were like, it doesn't make any sense now.
The dead. That'll be funny.
That'll be funny.
Dear.
Right, so we talked a bit about the maths.
Yes.
Should I explain about the maths?
Yeah, go for it.
So...
Or do you just mean maths in general?
No, obviously, the mathematics of ancient Egypt.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
So it's fundamentally entwined with their actual practical needs. So I think the math that they came up with, it was notably advanced for its time, I just want to say that as a great standpoint. But it was mainly to do with, like, geometry, because they were building lots of stuff. Like, they had, the sphinxes, temples... pyramids. So they were very
like
precise.
Cities as well?
Yeah. Obviously,
they were straight up building cities as well.
Of course. I didn't feel I would bear mentioning. Of course, aqueducts.
After what I learned last week, I just didn't think they had cities going on, you know?
They had major cities going on.
Major cities going on.
Yeah. So they required very precise geometric and arithmetic calculations. So they developed a decimal system for numbers and used hieroglyphs for counting, which included separate symbols for units of tens, thousands, hundreds, all the way up to a million. And they also had fractions, but only unit fractions, with the numerator being one, except for two-thirds and three-quarters, which were represented as special cases. Now, geometry played a crucial role in land measurements, particularly important after the annual Nile floods, which raised boundary markers. The Rhind mathematical papyrus, which is a key ancient Egyptian text, provides insight into the understanding of areas and volumes. The document includes problems related to algebra, geometry, arithmetic, demonstrating their capability to solve linear equations and calculate areas of triangle, rectangles, and circles using an approximated value of pi, which seems absolutely crazy.
Pretty wild.
Yeah. Their calendar, based on lunar and solar cycles, was vital for, you know, as we said, agriculture and religious purposes, and evidencing their understanding of the astronomical cycles and their mathematical applications to their daily life. So, crazy stuff. But imagine, I was going to say, do you know what? I was about to make such a redundant statement. Like, imagine using symbols for maths. It's like algebra. It's just algebra. Just algebra.
Honestly, it's just normal.
Imagine using their letters for doing maths and stuff like X, Y, and Z. Like, who would do that?
Such a crazy
idea.
How abstract.
Yeah,
abstract would I do? It is crazy to think that, you know, like thousands of years ago, that fundamentally these people were just the same as us, right? So brains worked in the same way. They were using similar methodologies that we use now. Okay, we have a bit of a better understanding now of maths, we hope. But yeah, it's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Wild indeed.
Indeed.
All right. And they were using that math to build some certain structures which we should cover
triangular
this episode.
In nature, apart from the base, which was square.
And if you haven't guessed it yet, the pyramids.
Dice. Oh, yeah, sorry, pyramids.
Oh,
yeah,
pyramids. Yes. tetrahedral dice.
20-sided dice. To be fair, that'd be more impressive than a pyramid.
It would be quite impressive. Yeah, just a d20 there.
Yeah, a massive d20.
So, obviously, the most famous pyramids in Egypt that we think of are the pyramids built on the Giza Plateau. So mentioned the pyramids of Giza. However, there are at least 118 identified Egyptian pyramids. Approximately 80 that were built within the kingdom of Kush, which is now located in the modern country of Sudan. And of those located in modern Egypt, most were built as tombs for the country's pharaohs and their consorts during the Old and Middle Kingdom periods. And if you want to learn about the different periods of Egypt, you can check out our episode last week on that. The construction of the Great Pyramids of Giza, I guess I'll focus on those because they're the most famous and the biggest, is one of the most remarkable engineering achievements, I think, in human history, given its time. Mm-hmm. So much so that we're still somewhat unsure exactly how they did it.
Oh, yeah, I've got some conspiracy theories about this. Do you want to hear some ideas about how they did it? That is one of them, yes. Yes, alien architects. Popular theory posits that the pyramid's constructions was influenced by extraterrestrial beings. Supporters of this argue that the alignments of the pyramids with celestial bodies and their precise construction can only be achieved with advanced knowledge or technology supposedly provided by aliens. But as we've said, we say 48% wrong? Not aligned?
Oh, no. The angle of alignment was thought to be 37 degrees to true north. However, it's thought that it was measured now to be 50 to 47.
Yeah, so that's completely off. Because if we had aliens, it'd be perfect, wouldn't it? Let's be honest. If there was aliens
unless
coming down to
they
tell
knew
us,
that you'd say that 2,000 years later, and then they're like, we're just going to throw this one guy off.
One guy. Okay, another one. Dinosaurs.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
You know, the bizarre theory that suggests that ancient Egyptians tamed dinosaurs to assist in the construction of the pyramids. This is ideally supported by manipulated images and unfound claims of archaeological evidence pointed to the description of beastly creatures in ancient texts as proof of dinosaurs' existence and involvement in the pyramids' construction.
Interesting. Okay.
Next one, grain storage. Inspired by a literal interpretation of the Old Testament, some believe that the pyramids were built as granaries, not tombs. And this theory, revived by a public figure like Ben Carson, who's an absolute idiot if you know who he is, suggests that Joseph, the biblical fame, designed the pyramid to store grain during the 7 years of predicted famine.
Okay.
Then we have the Atlantean legacy. So according to this theory, I'm a big fan of Atlantis. Big, great, one of the better childhood animation movies. According to this theory, good time. Do you know there's like 3 and 4? You know what? They're not good. Just watch the first one. It's like Treasure Planet. Just watch the first one. According to this theory, the true architects of the pyramids were not Egyptians, but Atlanteans from the sunken city of Atlantis. Proponents argue that the technical prowess needed to build the pyramids were beyond ancient Egyptian capabilities, but within reach of the advanced Atlantean civilization. and the last
interesting
one. Levitation and telekinesis, Kyle. Some theorists claim ancient Egyptians used lost technologies or psychic powers for the pyramid's construction. They suggest that acoustic levitation or telekinetic powers were employed to move and place enormous stone blocks, pointing to depictions of the ancient Egyptian art and misunderstood interpretations of hieroglyphs as evidence. Yeah. Telekinesis, Kyle.
I don't know what. I wish we had acoustic telekinesis.
That'd be pretty sick.
I have a weird fact about the pyramids.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those facts that doesn't sound true, but it is.
Okay, go for it. Hit me your best shot.
So Cleopatra, obviously, ancient Egypt. She is actually tied with the last era of ancient Egypt because when she committed suicide, then it fell under the Roman Empire. So according to some scholars, that was the end of ancient Egypt as an era. However, Cleopatra lived closer in time to the building of the first Pizza Hut than she did to the building of the pyramids. And I think that just illustrates how big of a scale and how long ago these pyramids were built.
It's one of those crazy things. Time, ancient time is weird. It's a crazy thing. It's like
ancient time is longer than normal time.
Yeah. what would you say? It was about the Oxford University and the Aztecs being around at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
I think there's one about dinosaurs as well. Oh.
Jesus?
It's
dinosaurs and Jesus. Yeah, I've also heard that.
No. Okay. So humans live closer to the time of the T-Rex than the T-Rex live to the time of the Stegosaurus. Like, well, they're often pictured together in films and popular culture. However, the T-Rex lives still lives closer to us, our time, than it did to the Stegosaurus time. Prehistoric time be wild. Anyway, crazy. I feel like we've diverged quite a lot now from the pyramid.
Okay, yeah, I'll get back on. I got some specs for you. Got some numbers.
Give us them numbers.
This is just for the Great Pyramid of Giza. I don't have for all the 100. What did you say, 114?
18.
18, oh, four off, it's close. So the Great Pyramid of Giza originally stood 146 meters tall. That's 481 feet for all you people out there. Making it the tallest human-made structure for over 3,800 years, it held that title. Now, over time, it's been reduced to 138, so it got shrunk by 12 meters due to the removal of its limestone casing, and then its what do you call them, capstones?
Pyramidal things.
Pyramidoids, yeah. The removal of its pyramidoids. its cap. Stones. Its base measures around about 230 meters square, with an estimated volume of roughly 2.6 million cubic meters of block. Estimated 2.3 million large blocks it took to build, weighing a total of 6 million tons.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just a light feathering.
Small dusting in the desert of some bricks.
Yeah. Maybe just a giant got bored and was playing with his Lego. That wasn't in the conspiracy theory. That's much more believable than dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Giants.
Maybe he stepped on it and that's why the capstones are missing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's impressive. It's a lot.
We don't really know how they did it.
We know why, but we don't really know how.
Yeah.
So I've got a few theories here. The first is ramp theory. They were playing green and they were just ramping.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to make that joke, but that's a very, very niche.
Very niche.
Very niche.
So this theory suggests that ancient Egyptians used ramps to transport the massive limestone blocks from quarries to the construction site and then lift them into place. Mm-hmm. These ramps could have been straight, they could have been zigzagging, they could be built using mud brick or limestone chips or even compacted sand. The evidence for ramp construction comes from ancient depictions such as the Dendera Temple relief and the Palermo stone. I realise I said that with the most British accent you can imagine. However, I don't know what language that comes from. So, as well as archaeological discoveries of ramp remnants near pyramid sites. However, the exact configuration and mechanics of these ramps remains a subject of debate. So it's likely that ramps were involved somewhat.
Yeah.
And all parts of it were unsure. However, there were ramps. It makes sense. That's the way it was done.
Yeah, I still have a very interesting theory that was to do. Do you know when we in the ancient Rome episode we talked about reverse siphons?
Oh yeah,
that they use not reverse siphon, but essentially they floated the blocks up. So they dug down, made all the blocks, flooded it, but on the blocks they put like flotation devices and then pushed them up towards a hole, which then went up to the top, and then the blocks floated up, and from there they then like moved them round.
I guess they could have done that with like the Nile flooding. I just don't understand how back then they would have created enough pressure and maintained that pressure to forcefully push water into something to, you know, make that. But they were cleverer than I. They built the pyramids, so, you know.
Yeah, and they had a lot of slaves. You got to think. They had a lot of manpower going into this.
That's like, what I was going to check.
Even if they just used, like, a bucket of water, there was a lot of them. So, yeah. There's the... With the building on the ramp and the sleds, there was... I'm not sure what they called it, but it was essentially the watering of the sleds. or wetting the sand in front of the sleds.
Yes.
Yeah, to reduce the friction. Such a smart idea.
So, yeah, I seem to remember coming across this previously. According to Notiate archaeologist Mark Lenner and Zahi Hawass, who I mentioned earlier lying to the people, that's because he's now on a committee and that's what they do. The pyramids were not built by slaves. In fact, archaeological discoveries in the 1990s in Cairo show the workers were paid labourers rather than slaves. Rather, it was the farmers who built the pyramids during flooding when they could not work their lands.
Mm-hmm. I guarantee there were still slaves, though. I don't...
I'm sure there were some slaves. Where are they getting those slaves from, though?
It's a massive civilization that spanned a lot of... far. I'm sure. It's ancient history. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
There was a guy.
Apparently, the slaves would never. So, according to the archaeological findings that they found around it, more than anything, there was bread jars and hundreds of thousands of them, enough to feed all the workers who slept in long, purpose-built dormitories. Slaves would never have been treated this well. So that, we think that these labourers were recruited from farms, perhaps from a region much further down the Nile, near Luxor.
Many slaves who worked from temples, estates, lived under punitive conditions, but on average, the ancient Egyptian slave led a life similar to a serf. Egyptian slaves, specifically during the New Kingdom era, originated from foreign lands. The slaves themselves were seen as accomplishments to the Egyptian king's reign and a sign of power. Slaves, or back, were seen as property and a commodity to be bought and sold.
Yeah. No, I wasn't debating that slaves existed.
The Great Pyramids were not built by slaves.
Yes.
Thus is the consensus among Egyptologists.
Bloody Egyptologists think they know everything.
Yeah.
What they don't know is how they built the slaves.
Built the slaves? nobody knows how slaves were. there's a guy's YouTube channel, which I can never remember what it was called, but it's just one guy who was just like proving how one person, because I'm like, no, one person couldn't move a block, blah, 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 blah. But essentially, he went and disproved that and made a bunch of methods that one could use by themselves, move massive blocks of limestone.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there was one that like he just used a really simple pivot and like spinning it, you could move a block, you know, however, it would take a while, but you could move a block however big just by putting like a pinpoint pivot down and then just rotating around that and then moving to the other side.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's pretty wild.
Crazy stuff. I like the flotation idea, though.
Yeah, that is a good idea. That would be interesting. Other ideas I've got here are straight ramp theory. Internal ramp theory, proposed by French architect Jean-Pierre Houdin. This theory suggests that a spiraling internal ramp was built within the pyramid's core structure. The blocks were transported and lifted using this ramp, which gradually incorporated into the pyramid as it was constructed. Houdin's theory is based on architectural analysis of the pyramid's internal structure and computer simulations, but it's yet to be proven. It wouldn't be crazy, right, for that to be... found at some point,
mm-hmm.
but now it's constructed, I can imagine it's hard to find. Water transport theory, yes, is exactly as you said. The straight ramp theory, which is just using leverage in the use of sledges and rollers and possibly counterweights to move massive stones. Pulleys, I don't think, were as much of a thing back then, but I can imagine pulleys mm-hmm. being pretty effective ways to move things, right?
I sent you an image of how the water gates work. Flotation chambers and shafts. They don't use reverse siphon. That was incorrect. It's essentially like you would imagine a lock in a canal.
Yeah.
They have two gates that fill up with water, and then it just sustains the level at the top where there's a working level of a canal, and then they like push it into and under these gates that hold the water in place, and then it just floats up.
And because it's angled, it floats up.
Yeah.
Oh, that is clever.
That is smart, isn't it? That's why I want
ancient Egyptian smart people.
Just all the ancients, they're very smart. This is why I want it to be that one, because I like the idea of it being really smart. Yeah, they essentially get the water to the base of the pyramid, build a rectangle, like a square around the pyramid, so there's water encompassing the whole thing, and then slowly build it up.
What I don't get is how that water level is maintained at like a incline.
What do you mean?
So the water at the top there.
Yeah.
Normally if you fill two connected spaces with water, they will balance each other out, won't they?
If you look at the gates. So essentially the first and second gate seal it shut. So you close the second gate, put all the stones in between the first and second gate. And then close the first gate and then open the second gate.
Makes sense. That's cool. Yeah. Okay, we'll put this picture on our socials so you guys can also see what we are speaking about.
What we're discussing around. It looks like a reverse siphon on the other side, but it flows up.
It's at the top of the pyramid, you've got an open tube. At the bottom, you put stuff in, you seal it shut, fill water from the top so that the stuff floats up. Yeah, it's a very cool system.
Yeah,
Very cool indeed. Have you got any other theories on how it was constructed?
Or the methods of construction? No, I looked at the water and then the sled tests.
Okay. I've got some theories of how they got the blocks to the pyramids.
The Nile River.
Yeah.
That's my theory. They floated them.
It's a good theory, and that is one of the more prominent ones. For a while, so if you have been or you see the Great Pyramids now, you'll notice that the Nile River is actually really quite far away. But
back in the day, it wasn't, though, was it?
Back in the day, it was literally right next to them.
Yeah.
And I watched this really interesting documentary that went about proving that. And it was really cool.
Is it the salt?
I can't remember. I think they did a lot of modeling, archaeological stuff. So you find stones that, you only expect it to find there if there's been a big river over them and stuff like that. Over the 1,000 years, it has changed, thousands of years even, it's changed its course. Now, they do think they could have done some overland transport. As Mitch said, sledges, rollers, compacting sand, wetting sand, slaves,
Could have been.
You never know. Aliens?
Could have been aliens.
Acoustic levitation?
Telekinesis, I heard.
That's what I heard. All right. We've got a couple minutes before we hit the hour. Is there anything else you would like to cover?
I have got. Let me just check the notes. Mass pyramid specs. spec test. That's it for Eastern Egypt. Bit short.
Okay.
Part two. But if you've got something you want to chat about,
three minutes. It's fine. We could be a little bit short. I do have a whole section on irrigation.
Irrigation
however, that's
station.
Not enough to. I can't go through all of that in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at I think they were the earliest sign of industrial scale irrigation and really making use of the Nile in a really, really clever way. Canals, ditches, levees, embankments, reservoirs, storage basins, and other things called shadufs and sakias. Anyway, go check that out if that at all sounds interesting. We're still using techniques that they implemented for the first time back then. So I guess that will bring us to a wrap. Don't forget to share this with your friends, families, whoever will listen, I suppose.
gave up halfway through that. Friends, families, just people.
Honestly, if they listen, we'll take it. Don't forget to give us a rating if you can. It really helps us out. And if you can leave a comment or interact with whatever you can wherever you're listening, it helps us out massively. If you want to follow us on any of the socials, Instagram is probably the best place to find us these days. Information Entropy Pod. That's where we'll find your messages most quickly. And that's where we post now because the website formerly known as Twitter is dead in my eyes. Cool. Any last side notes?
No side notes apart from Thunder Junction, Magic the Gathering expansion comes out. It's Friday. If anyone anybody's up on that,
The pre-release is this weekend, 12th to the 14th.
Yeah, it is.
All right, cool. Well, have yourselves a fun time, and we'll catch you guys the next time.
Ciao for now.